From the sun-drenched studios of the Center for Distributed Learning at the University of Central Florida, I'm Kelvin Thompson.
And I'm Tom Cavanaugh.
And you're listening to TopCast, the Teaching Online Podcast.
Sun-drenched, huh?
Sun-drenched. See, you know, people don't know that we paid good building dollars to get that retractable ceiling in so that we could have the sunlight soaking us.
It is sunny outside. I was just outside. It's lovely here in Orlando, but the room we're in is a bit of a bunker now.
Don't tell people that. Okay. Everything is sunny. We have liquid sunshine. Ain't no sunshine when it's raining. I say it's like, nothing?
No. Okay. No. We don't want to have to pay rights for that.
Okay. All right.
So,
yes,
Kelvin.
Tom.
What is on the docket today? I see the topic that I've never seen before. We didn't talk about this beforehand at all.
Yeah, we wing all this stuff.
Is blended learning.
Blended learning.
So the first question that I have about blended learning, naturally, I think the first question everyone has about blended learning is, what's in the thermos?
Blended learning's in the thermos.
Blended learning is in the thermos.
Well, you know, I try to make a connection with each of these topics. So in the thermos today, as we know, I think you know anyway, I like to say I'm a single origin coffee kind of guy, right? So was it Forrest Gump said, Mama always said life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. So he could have been talking about single origin coffee because you don't know what you're going to get. You know, it's you pick a region, you think it's going to be good, but that particular crop, whatever. And I love just the surprise of that.
Okay.
I go out for breakfast and they say, well, how would you like your eggs? Surprise me. And if you tell me, it's not a surprise. I like being surprised. But the deal with single origin brings that about. But most people, they don't like surprises. They like consistency, and that's where coffee blends come in. So today I'm usually single origin, but if I'm going to buy a blend, it's this blend. So it's my favorite blend called Storyville. And the thing with blends, consistency. And so consistently, it has a nice little pleasant taste to it, I think.
Yeah, okay. Fine. Consistency.
Consistency. Blended. Blended learning.
I'm wondering if maybe we should have had a carafe. Speaking of blends, this would have been the wine podcast, but we'll stick with our coffee theme.
That's right.
So blended learning. We know a little bit more about what a coffee blend is.
Yes.
Let's talk about what a blended course might actually be.
It's how we make sure that there's institutionally consistency from one course to another across the entire institution. Isn't that blended learning?
Yeah, that happens.
Not so much. That, what did Willy Wonka say? You know, strike that, reverse it.
Right.
You know, Not the un of that. So what is blended learning?
Do you want me to take a shot at defining first?
Yeah.
So I'll tell you, there are definitions that that different organizations have, such as the Online Learning Consortium, and different institutions have. And I'll always share how we define it here at UCF, which I think is consistent with other places. But our definition here, as you know, is very broad. We have a number of different modalities, and blended is one of them. We call it mixed mode because we started doing it before people started using the term.
We thought
blended.
Mixed mode would just have such market appeal.
Yeah, but it is blended. It's just mixed mode sort of predated the popularity of the term blended. And that is any course that reduces the face-to-face attendance requirement through the use of online learning. So basically, the percentage is irrelevant. If you reduce the seat time at all, it is considered a blended class. Now, there are a lot of practical implications that go along with that, such as room scheduling and sharing with other faculty and what makes pedagogical sense for your course and all kinds of other influences on what that means. But if you just said, this one class, we're not going to meet in the middle of the semester and we're going to do it online, it's technically, it could be a blended class. Now, Online Learning Consortium breaks theirs into thresholds based on percentages.
Yeah.
And I believe the blended percentage is, 25 to 79%?
Something like
that.
And, you know, and that's a very good point. It seems like organizational definitions, like OLC's definition, or some maybe even accrediting bodies, certainly some state governments for public institutions, these percentage things come into play. And I swear that is probably the number one question I get asked with regard to blended learning is, well, what percentage should be face-to-face and what percentage should be online? As if we know what that even means.
Right. I get that. That's the number one question I get about it, too. But usually it comes in the, how much do I have to one side or the other?
I have sometimes quipped, and I hesitate to share this because I don't want to sound too negative or alienate people or anything, but I have quipped before to faculty and designer groups that, maybe if we could avoid having mathematical symbols in our definitions of blended learning, that would be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully, at UCF, we haven't put any mathematical symbols in there. We use these very broad terms, right?
Yeah.
But I think there's something to be said for that. But all that being said, you can understand why people who were trying to provide guidance and rules would go with a percentage, right?
You can
see that.
You want a heuristic. You want some template that you follow. Okay, so every other class needs to be face-to-face or blended. I get that, so I'll build my course like that. And if that's what makes sense, or if it sometimes happens, your department chair comes to you and says, you get it Tuesday, and Kelvin gets it Thursday mm-hmm. from 2 to 3:30, you just build your class that way, and there's not a whole lot you can do about it.
That's right.
But, you know, that percentage is something that people can get hung up on, and I don't think that should be the driver.
No, I don't either. And it's a deceptively simple question, right? Because that assumes that we know what, quote, percent of a class, unquote, is,
mm-hmm.
you know? Because it's not just the class meeting times necessarily when you say how much of a class is online, how much is face-to-face, because there's the stuff that, you know, we go back to a face-to-face environment with somebody having a lecture. And, you know, and it starts at 10 o'clock and it ends at 10:50 or whatever, and that's three times a week. And so, but that's not all that a class is. There's,
right.
you know, all that Carnegie unit kind of out of class experience kind of thing
right.
that goes into it, and interactions and if you want to call that homework and all that. So it gets very...
It's the same problems as trying to define work in an online class.
Yes.
It's not just the amount of time you spend reading whatever's on the website. It's
right.
all the homework you would have done out of class.
So it's more nuanced,
exactly.
I think, in that sense. But, you know, here's the thing, too, that I've said before when working with other institutions, and that is blended learning, while it has some, and we can talk about some of these, some remarkably great affordances for learning and for institutional benefit, it's hard to pull off at an institutional scale. Blended learning's hard to implement systemically across
mm-hmm.
an institution. It's much harder than implementing online programs, I think. That's what I've said before. Do you agree with that?
I do agree with that for a couple of reasons. One is because you've got... in some ways, more moving parts with
mm-hmm.
with a blended course, because you've got not just the online piece of the course, but also the face-to-face piece, which means interfacing with college or university scheduling systems and coordinating between different faculty who are going to each reside in the same block. And and that can get really complicated. In addition, when you say an online class, people kind of know what that means.
Mm-hmm.
It means I'm doing all my work online.
Mm-hmm.
A blended class... what does that mean?
Yeah.
And there are a lot of different ways to define blended learning. And plus, scaling it.
Mm-hmm.
If you had, say, a tremendous amount of demand in an online class and you had the ability to assign an additional faculty member or get an adjunct or something to support that demand, it's very easy to create a new course section online.
Mm-hmm.
But blended... it is not so easy because there's a physical classroom space you still need to find somewhere.
Right.
And if you're at capacity, you can't just open up a new classroom for it. It becomes a lot more complicated to scale, which is why I think it makes it more difficult. So do you want to talk a little bit about, because we've alluded to this
mm-hmm.
a couple of times, about the definition of blended. And there are a lot of different ways to slice the onion or peel the onion.
Mm-hmm.
I'll mix my metaphors. To drink the blended coffee. and what the different types of blending are,
mm-hmm.
different from how I've just defined it, which might be a more traditional definition of blended learning where you do some of the class online, you do some of it face to face. Well, that's very broad, but within that broader definition, there are different things people may think of when you say blended learning.
Yeah, that's all true. And my head goes all kinds of different directions. It's probably worth a comment that as variable as it is within higher education, it even gets more so when you talk about blended learning and you extend it to the K-12 space.
Mm-hmm.
Because blended means even some other things there. I mean, yeah, it's still true under the same umbrella, right, of
true.
Online and face-to-face kind of broadly.
But I've seen the K-12 model where the online blended portion of it, the student still is in the physical school, facility.
That's right.
It's not like they're home or they have any sort of asynchronous flexibility to do that blended portion.
That's right.
You know, it is a different model.
But as a transitional point, I mean, one of the approaches, I guess, with K-12 blended is kind of a self-blend of I'm taking my regular coursework and I mix in some virtual school courses. And so I'm having a blended experience as a student because I'm mixing and matching online and face-to-face, which is different than a blended course, you know? And so I guess even in higher education, sometimes we can talk about that with like a self-blended program where course A is face-to-face and course B is fully online and so forth. So blended learning can end up meaning that in some contexts.
Yeah, so students can blend their own academic path if those options exist for them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's certainly what we've done here, tried to give students a lot of choice so they have their own agency to determine their own path, what meets their needs and any given kind of at any given point in their life, whether they're a non-traditional student coming back to school or a traditional student who might need some sort of flexibility. And that can be face-to-face, blended, or online, and location between main campus, extended campus, regional campus, whatever your particular institution, how it's set up. And then you have things like flipped classes.
Mm-hmm.
So is a flipped class blended?
Right.
Here, I would say probably not, given our definition, because a flipped class does not imply any reduction in seat time based upon the use of technology.
That's right.
It's not to say it's a bad thing or a bad pedagogical practice, because we have plenty of faculty doing it, and I think it's good when done right, but it's not blended by our definition.
Right. You know, the more broad a group of folks that I'm interacting with or about blended learning, the broader I go out, and I've sometimes done this. I've even put this together graphically in kind of concentric circles, right? And if I'm just trying to get common ground with folks, I'll say, well, blended can mean a lot of things to a lot of people, and it just can mean multiple approaches. Here's a funny story. I think I've told you the story before. So we were doing a seminar here at UCF a year or two back on the topic of blended learning course design. And the announcements had gone out, and my name was signed at the bottom of the announcement. And one of our faculty colleagues wrote me back and said, oh, I'm so excited for this topic. It's going to be wonderful. Blended learning is great. By the way, what's blended learning?
Yeah.
And it's like, really? And then I said, well, it's, you know, we would say mixed mode here at UCF for the most part, but this combination strategically of online and face-to-face. And oh, okay, that sounds great. Yeah, I thought maybe it was about like team teaching or something.
Yeah, wow. Talk about your boundary objects.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. So the idea of blending a couple of different things, that's, you know, I start there with people and then work my way out into... Well, usually we're all agreed, though, that it's technology, that some kind of online stuff, maybe face-to-face and online. And the big differentiator comes between the folks, like you said, Tom, who would talk about reducing the amount of face-to-face class meeting times or not.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the biggest distinction comes. And then from there, then we get really particular and we can get into talking about flipped. And I think you're right. Most people, when they talk about flipped, do not talk about a reduction in seat time. But I guess potentially you could go that direction. But then you can get very nuanced, and you can almost get into like these esoteric recipes or something. I try to stay away from that personally and just try to get into, well, what are you trying to accomplish with this? What we've sometimes talked about with... some of the faculty development that we've done on blended learning here and that we've shared with the world through the blendedlearningtoolkit.org site and the BlendKit course, open online course materials and so forth, is content presentations, interaction opportunities, learning assessment opportunities, all of that can be blended.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could blend each of those.
You could blend an assignment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so unbundling it or dealing with the nuances of it, you know, zooming in a little bit to recognize that. I love this. I interviewed our colleague Dylan Barth from the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee some years ago on blended learning. And in the midst of the conversation with him, we hit upon this phrase, blended learning is more pedagogically responsive mm-hmm. than some of the other modalities because it allows the instructor to blend, you know, kind of come up with a custom blend that makes sense for her or his learning needs in the class. And so that's a real good reason to do blended learning as an individual instructor. I can
sure.
make some things happen that are really powerful, but it's hard.
It is hard. But blended learning kind of sits, though, in the unique position of being perhaps in the sweet spot that overlaps between institutionally mandated kinds of initiatives, like online learning often mm-hmm. is. We've identified a need in the community or a market opportunity or something, and we're going to go pursue that with an online program to reach that audience versus web enhancing your face-to-face course, which is done at the grassroots, boots on the ground, faculty mm-hmm. in the classroom kind of level, and overlapping the institutional goals with the individual faculty preferences is blended learning.
Yep.
And if you can tap that coalescence of agendas, if you will, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. then you can really move the needle to try and make a difference, both pedagogically as mm-hmm. well as moving the institution. That can be difficult
yeah.
to do at times, but if you do it, it offers the promise of being really effective. And maybe in the kind of the time we have left here, we can talk a little bit about the efficacy of mm-hmm. blended learning. I know at least here we have studied blended mm-hmm, learning for mm-hmm. almost 20 years, and what we have found is that it outperforms
yep.
face-to-face and fully online courses in
yep.
almost every measure.
Yep.
When you look at student success, when you look at withdrawal, when you look at the student perception of instruction, which is our end-of-course evaluation, blended learning outperforms all of them by significant margins, which is really interesting.
Yeah, and people perhaps have run across the citation of this Department of Ed meta-analysis study from a few years ago about online learning, and the factoid that gets quoted all over the place is the nature of blended learning,
mm-hmm.
that blended is better as a result of that, and so people kind of beat that drum. We've certainly seen that to be the case here.
Yeah.
That was interesting, just that it's this broad comparison. You know, I it makes me nervous, though, right? The idea that let's just put this tag blended on a course or a program and we think that we're going to get better outcomes, because I know enough to know that isn't necessarily the case, right? Blended learning can be the best of both worlds. It can be the worst of both worlds, too. It really comes down to design and teaching, like everything else does, right?
Right. Yeah, I think that's true. It was somewhat gratifying to see that SRI meta study that
yeah.
it reinforced what we have found here at our institution. But you're right, and I think there's an awful lot we could say maybe in the future about good practice in designing blended learning as opposed to just slapping the label on it, as you said, and calling it blended, or just giving somebody, you know, a fear I have in the online learning world, and I think it's applicable in blended, because it's sort of a type of online learning, is that we just hand faculty an LMS shell and say, go teach,
mm-hmm.
and kind of outrun our quality supply lines, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to scale, but it's hard to scale with quality.
Mm-hmm.
And I think blended learning, in order to realize the effectiveness of the stuff that the meta study found, or maybe what we found here, requires some investment of time
mm-hmm.
in faculty to help them understand mm-hmm. how mm-hmm. to leverage the affordances of each of those modalities, because they're each unique and offer, you know, advantages and disadvantages if you don't handle it just right. And it can be really rewarding for faculty and students to have a class that's blended. But it can also be pretty miserable if they don't do it quite right.
I'm hesitant to tell the story, but I'll tell it anyway. I was out at dinner a couple of years ago, right? And the server in town here in Orlando, in the resorts area, and as I ended up in conversation with the server, she said that she was a UCF student, and you know, what did I ask her, right?
Yeah, you take any online classes?
That's right.
That's the question I always ask.
That's right, online, blended, whatever. And we got into talking about blended learning a little bit, and she said, well, no, I don't really take online classes, but I've been taking some mixed mode classes. Yeah. And I'm like, well, how's that going for you, waiting for the, it's great, right?
Mm-hmm.
She did not have good things to say.
Really?
And I dug in a little bit, and in her particular situation, sadly, and I'm sure this is the only time it's ever happened at our institution. I just happened to get that one student. Her instructor was basically duplicating face-to-face and online, mm-hmm. and was basically replicating two classes in one. And she just described it being a miserable experience. Well, you know, he had us go do the stuff online, and then we came back to class, and it's like we didn't even do the stuff online. We're doing it all over again in class. And I mean, and sadly, that person just missed the boat, right? I know for me, I'd say that integration of the face-to-face and the online environments in a blended course is probably the number one design challenge. Getting that right, the hardest thing that there is. But if that works, everything else is going to work.
Well, I'm glad to say that her faculty member no longer works here.
Yeah, that's right.
I can say with confidence, I think, not knowing who it is at all. There's a lot more to say about blended learning.
But we're not going to say it today.
We're not going to say it today, but I think we will say it in the future because it's something we care a lot about, both individually and institutionally.
Yes.
You know, we've been very involved with, and you particularly, Kelvin, mm-hmm. with our BlendKit MOOC, mm-hmm. The Blended Learning Toolkit, which still mm-hmm. exists out there. And I would encourage anybody who's interested in blended learning to go check out blendedlearningtoolkit.org. Mm-hmm. It's a bunch of free Creative Commons open resources.
You'll love it.
You'll love it, yeah.
Change your life.
Yeah, so and maybe we'll kind of put a pin in blended mm-hmm. learning there for now, and we'll pick it up at another time.
Yep, that sounds good. And if your experience has been different than ours about blended learning, we'd encourage you to use the interaction opportunities available to you. Write in. Tell us what you think. And tell us about your experience, why blended learning hasn't worked so well for you. But until next time, for TopCast, I'm Kelvin.
And I'm Tom.
See ya.